Hello, this is Wendy Bauer with the Decatur Herald and Review, June 20th, 2016. We will begin today's reading on the front page with an article headlined, Clinton Jewel Could Face Financial Challenges. This is from Clinton. Ed Wallet, a former Clinton mayor and former president of the Vespasian Warner Public Library District, cannot imagine what the library would look like if it weren't for the Exelon nuclear power plant. In 1989, voters approved a new library district which expanded it from the Clinton city limits to the same boundaries of Clinton Community Unit 15 school district that includes Clinton, Wapella, Hallsville, Lane, DeWitt, and the surrounding area. We know that a lot of residents outside of Clinton were using the library and they were charged a fee for some services, so this allowed some of them to be included in the district and added extra revenue to our taxing district, Wallet said. Voters also approved adding 24,000 square feet to the library, financed by $3.7 million in revenue bonds. It opened in October 1992. We would never have been able to do that without the power plant, said Wallet, who now lives in Springfield. It set that library up for generations and generations. People come there from all over the state for genealogy research, and people from the district use it all the time. It really is one of the jewels of Clinton. Although the building remains in good shape, Library Director Joan Rhodes has new concerns about its future because of the anticipated closure of the Exelon nuclear power plant, about 10 miles east of Clinton. In tax year 2014, the library received $446,928 in property tax payments from the plant, accounting for 56% of the district's property tax revenue. We are already working on our strategic planning to figure out what services the community needs and what hours we would need to be open, she said. This is very likely going to change how we do things. The library was founded in 1901 by the Clinton chapter of the PEO, Philanthropic Educational Organization. Within 5 years, Clinton native Vespasian Warner recognized the efforts and offered real estate plus $10,000 to the city to erect and complete a library. When it opened, the facility was one of the largest in downstate Illinois. Today, the library offers books, magazines, DVDs, Blu-ray discs, compact discs, audiobooks, e-content, video games, public access computers, Wi-Fi access, learning kits, reference help, and meeting rooms. Towns this size usually don't have a library this nice, Clinton resident Bill Hartford said on a recent visit. I don't have to go out of town to do research because you can pretty much find anything you need here. I hear that all the time, that we don't need libraries, but we need them more than ever, and now, especially with the news that the plant could be closing, Rhodes said. Libraries are very different now than when this one was first opened or even since the addition was built. We have bridged the technology gap. When you have the direct loss of 700 jobs from the Clinton power plant, people need resources, and that is where we can help. Rhodes said people who would lose their jobs need to have a place to use online services, file unemployment claims, and to hunt for and apply for jobs. I think that now we are going to be needed more than ever, she said. I have concerns, but I know we will figure out a way to be here for those who need us. And the article is accompanied by two pictures. One, a little girl reading with a large, friendly, comfortable bear in the background. Kate Parrish, 7, of Clinton, reads in the Children's Department of the Vespasian Warner Public Library in Clinton. The next picture is also a small child, small boy. Levi Lyon, 6, uses a computer in the Children's Department of the Vespasian Warner Public Library in Clinton. The next article from the front page is by Tony Reed from Decatur. Decatur's Jake Tolbert turns tin into ukuleles. Tin Pan Alley in New York City was the epicenter of the American popular song industry at the turn of the 20th century. Decatur do-it-yourself musician Jake Talbert makes no such claims to similar resounding fame, but he is remarkably melodic when strumming a cookie tin or even a tiny Altoids curiously strong mince tin. He turns them into ukuleles, which are that species of stringed instruments looking like mini guitars that never got the chance to grow up. A data analyst, who is a director of data services at Millikan University, Talbert loves solving puzzles and translates that keenness into his spare time passion, music, by figuring out cool new ukulele configurations with which to play. My dad loves York peppermint patties, so he found one of those classical tins at a garage sale, and he took it and made a banjo ukulele out of it, says Tolbert's 13-year-old son, Jonah. He's not much into playing ukulele himself yet, but is already well-schooled on ukulele variations and his dad's ability to produce them while involving the metallic repositories for things we like to eat. The tins form the body of Tolbert's ukuleles, with the necks and heads fashioned with scrap bits of wood and odds and ends he scavenges from dumpsters and yard sales. He downplays his self-taught woodworking skills, but the results are cute and graceful little instruments he can create in about 2 days, if he really takes a run at it. Well, cookie tin metal is real soft and thin, and they have a kind of funky, floppy sound to them when played, says Talbert, 38. And so, a ukulele made out of a cookie tin, or an Altoids mint tin, isn't going to sound great, but oh, they just look so cool. He is also a serious banjo player and has a Depression-era instrument picked up for a song that he has modified and now sounds louder and better than anything he's found in a music store, he says. Talbert plays with the Millikan Bluegrass Band, but his big interest is in what he describes as old-time music. These ye oldie folk tunes pluck the mystic chords of memory going back to the beginnings of this nation, and Talbert has a particular fondness for the way the music was played when the technology arrived to record it in the first half of the 20th century. Modern domestic life, for a creative musician, however, as for all family men, is scored these days as a symphony of compromise, and Talbert tries not to hit any discordant notes. He could, for example, sit in the living room hammering out practice tunes on the loud banjo, but that tends to get lonely, as son Jonah, 6-year-old daughter Micah, and his wife Jen seek peace in quieter pastures. Enter the trusty Altoids tin uke, which, tuned in a similar way to a banjo, allows for harmonious practice without its muted notes clearing the room. It's also great for traveling, fits right in your suitcase, Talbert says, and playing it is just so much fun. I love messing around with this stuff. Several pictures accompany this article. First one, he's playing it, what appears to be a peppermint patty tin ukulele. Jake Tolbert's basement is filled with a variety of instruments he has collected. Some of them are scheduled to be repurposed. Then there's a photograph of Jake playing with his Altoids mint tin ukulele. The Altoid mint tins are the base of this ukulele. Another photograph shows an interesting emblem, and the caption is, Talbert is curious about the Illinois guaranteed emblem on this old instrument he found. And finally, a guitar found in his grandfather's home is in the process of being altered by Talbert. From the local page, Allison Petty brings an article from Decatur, Council Mulls Northgate Future. The future of Northgate Shopping Center is in the Decatur City Council's hands tonight. U-Haul bought the mall at 2800 North Water Street in December with plans to renovate the space and offer truck rental and indoor storage. However, zoning for the area isn't compatible with those uses, a fact city officials have said they told the company before the purchase. In fact, the city's zoning ordinance did not allow heavy truck rental as a primary use in any area except downtown. The council could fix that tonight by changing zoning rules to allow for truck rental in an M1 intense commercial light industrial district. The council is then slated to consider a request from U-Haul to rezone the Northgate site to M1. It is currently zoned as B2 commercial district, which is retail oriented. City staff does not recommend allowing the change. The Decatur Plan Commission disagreed and voted to recommend it to the council, which has the final say. The Pershing Road corridor is targeted for retail and commercial development. Assistant City Manager Billy Tyus said, he stressed that the city's view has nothing to do with the U-Haul specifically. We're not making our recommendation based on who it is, we're making our recommendation based on land use, he said. That's an important distinction. In documents given to the Plan Commission, U-Haul says it wants to build a state-of-the-art facility with climate-controlled indoor storage. A representative for the company previously said there was confusion over how the zoning ordinance was written, and it had thought the truck rentals would be allowed. The mall, located at the highest traffic intersection in the city, has been mostly vacant for years. Tyus and Economic Development Officer Patrick Hoban know residents are eager to see the property filled again. But they say the emptiness didn't stem from a lack of interest. The property previously was not for sale. An asset management company held the property for which it was able to collect on several active leases. Tyus and Hoban believe that an M1 zoning designation is wrong for the site. Do you accept things for what they are or have been, or do you decide what you want it to be and move forward toward making that happen, Tyus said. Do you simply say, okay, we're going to just take what's given to us, or do you decide what you want the corridor and area to be in an effort to make the community better? To me, that's the question. And the sidebar says, if you go, the Decatur City Council meets at 5:30 p.m. Monday in the council chambers, third floor, Decatur Civic Center at 1 Gary K. Anderson Plaza. Also from Decatur, Tony Reed writes, Motorcycle Club marks Father's Day. Johnny Mann's motorcycle buddies know how to stage a roaring Father's Day family party experience, complete with loads of free food, prize giveaways, entertainment, and even visits from cool-looking police, squad cars, and fire trucks. Such was the lineup in Decatur's Hess Park Sunday afternoon for the Stagecoach Riders Motorcycle Club Father's Day event. Mann is the president of the close-knit cruising club, just 10 members, and says his club works all year to raise money and solicit donations to put on the Father's Day celebration, now in its 11th year. More than 100 children showed up with dads, moms, grandparents, and friends, and quickly formed an orderly line for the food, which included hot dogs, burgers, barbecue, and more. A magician did magic shows, there was a bouncy castle, and games and prize drawings, with prizes that included 39 new bicycles and a bunch of toys. The police and fire vehicles were on display, and kids got to sit in the driver's seat and try out the siren and lights options. Mann, surveying it all and looking as though he might melt in the 90-plus degree heat as he manned a grill and flipped burgers, nevertheless kept smiling. It takes me from one year to the next to organize all this, he said, but it's worth it. Mann, 61, says there aren't enough events celebrating Father's Day, and he also sees a wider purpose in showing people that motorcycle clubs aren't necessarily outlaw bad boys out there for themselves. The Lord has blessed us, has blessed me, he added, so we bless someone else. We just like to give back. His own adult daughter, Marla Jarrett, traveled all the way from her home in Chicago to help Dad out. She said there were visitors from as far as Tennessee enjoying themselves in the park Sunday, and the aim was to make it inclusive for everybody. So let's come together as one big family, no matter race, creed, color, or religion, she said. Let's just celebrate being here together. Celebrate the fathers, celebrate the children, and share some joy and laughter. And it's all free. Some of the pictures that accompany the article show Decatur police officer Katie Boland showing Jamiala Eubanks 6 how to operate a squad car's lights and siren at the Stagecoach Riders Motorcycle Club Father's Day event. Another photograph shows kids of all ages forming an orderly line waiting for their chance to sit in the driver's seat and work the lights and siren on a Decatur police squad car. And from Mattoon, sheriff planning to run races in uniform. Jimmy Rankin, the Coles County Sheriff, will be running races this summer and fall in his full uniform. Rankin said he wants to set a good example for all people, especially children. I've had this commitment for several years, and now my role provides a more visible platform to help serve others, he said. He said he is trying to set a good example for kids by showing up and being ready to run in full uniform. His message is primarily focused on personal wellness. For many people, running a race in any kind of uniform is uncomfortable. For Rankin, it's less about comfort and more about Coles County youth. He said that he wants to set a good example by racing and walking in uniform. Being a positive role model is important for Rankin, and he wants to emphasize health and fitness for kids, mentally and physically. Rankin was elected to the sheriff post in 2014, but his commitment to Coles County youth goes back several years. He has been an advocate and a catalyst for youth playgrounds in Humboldt and Ashmore, and in 2013, the Ashmore Mentoring Program was a Governor's Cup finalist. This award recognizes volunteer contributions across the state of Illinois. In 2016, Rankin said he plans to run walk in several races. The first race on the agenda is on July 2nd in Oakland, a sprint triathlon fundraising event for local veterans. Rankin's next race will be at the Lakeland College, the Serve to Strengthen race on August 27th. This race will directly benefit HOPE, Housing Outreach Prevention and Education, of East Central Illinois, a service that provides help for victims of domestic violence. On September 9th, Rankin will be running in a new event, the 5K Glow Run Walk at the Coles County Council on Aging Lifespan Center. The event will be at night, and runners, walkers will chase the cop. Rankin said that he will initially lead the pack with people chasing after me, but I expect to be quickly overtaken, considering that I'll be in full uniform. This event will raise funds for grandparents raising grandchildren. And to top it all off, Rankin will be running in the Paint the Town Pink event on October 8th, sponsored by Sarah Bush Lincoln Health Center. The funds raised at this event will be directed to help people dealing with and recovering from breast cancer. And we have two opinion articles from the opinion page. The first one by Jonah Greenberg. Political distractions abound. What a dumb time to be alive. In a normal country during normal times, the jihadi terrorist shooting in Orlando, in which 49 people were murdered in cold blood and more than 50 injured, would be a cause for serious debate about national security. Instead, it has been taken as an opportunity to light a bonfire of the inanities. Let's start at the top. President Obama once famously said, "Don't tell me words don't matter." Fast forward to this week when, a tantrum of biblical proportions, the furious president said, "Words don't matter." Responding to complaints from Donald Trump and others that he won't say the words radical Islamic terrorism, Obama huffed, "Calling a threat by a different name does not make it go away. This is a political distraction." Never mind that Obama's passion refuted his own argument. Perhaps he's right that there is no magic to the phrase radical Islam, But if that's the case, why the years of stubborn refusal to say it? It's almost like Obama still thinks words matter. He just wants to mock anyone who thinks the wrong words matter. But let's discuss this political distraction business. Before the blood had been mopped up in Orlando, the president and the woman seeking to replace him immediately tried to make the second worst Islamic terror attack on American soil into anything other than Islamic terrorism. Over and over again, news outlets uncritically reported on the common sense effort to implement more stringent background checks and get rid of automatic weapons, AR-15s, and other assault weapons. Well, automatic weapons, like machine guns, are already essentially banned for citizens, and the weapon used in Orlando wasn't an assault weapon or an AR-15. As for background checks, they already exist. Moreover, the FBI conducted two extensive investigations into the shooter, a background check far more exhaustive than any proposed checks. The terror watch list ban on gun purchases that Democrats now desire is a constitutional horror show if you believe, as the ACLU does, that the federal government shouldn't be allowed to unilaterally draw up secret lists to deny people their civil rights. Of course, Democrats insist they're just being pragmatic, which is why Senator Joe Manchin, Democrat from West Virginia, thinks the constitutional requirement for due process is killing us. What he didn't mention is that the Democrats' proposal is opposed by the head of the FBI because it would make tracking terrorists more difficult. Apparently, common sense requires trampling the Constitution to make the FBI's job harder. A ban on Muslims would not have stopped this attack. Neither would a wall. I don't know how one builds a wall to keep the internet out, Hillary Clinton said to a crowd at a campaign event in Virginia. Not one of Donald Trump's reckless ideas would have saved a single life in Orlando. Okay, but her proposals wouldn't have saved any lives either. Moreover, this is the woman who insisted her illegal private email server was secure because it was guarded by armed Secret Service agents. Ironically, their guns do save lives, but they're no more effective than a wall at combating the internet. Still, for all its stupidity, the gun conversation looks like a debate at the Algonquin Roundtable compared with the effort to make the Orlando shooting all about homophobia and gay marriage. While the precise motivation for the rampage remains unclear, the New York Times editorialized, it is evident that Mr. Mateen was driven by hatred toward gays and lesbians. Hate crimes don't happen in a vacuum, added the gray lady. I'm referring to the Times, not Clinton. They occur where bigotry is allowed to fester, where minorities are vilified, and where people are scapegoated for political gain. Tragically, this is the state of American politics, driven too often by Republican politicians who see prejudice as something to exploit, not extinguish. The killer was a registered Democrat. The source of his hatred was not the Christian coalition, but radical Islamism. He stated his motivation clearly during the shooting and for months prior. He reportedly also considered attacking that notoriously gay hangout, Disney World. Would we be hearing about the pernicious right-wing anti-cartoon character climate if he'd opted for that target? Maybe we would, because all that really matters to the people who hate saying radical Islamic terrorism is that we cling to the right political distractions. And then Eugene Robinson writes, Trump's lies make coverage difficult. From Washington. Donald Trump must be the biggest liar in the history of American politics, and that's saying something. Trump lies the way other people breathe. We're used to politicians who stretch the truth, who waffle or dissemble, who emphasize some facts while omitting others. But I can't think of any other political figure who so brazenly tells lie after lie, spraying audiences with such a fusillade of untruths that it is almost impossible to keep track. Perhaps he hopes the media and the nation will become numb to his constant lying. We must not. Trump lies when citing specifics. He claimed that the shooter in the Orlando massacre was an Afghan. The killer, Omar Mateen, was an American citizen born in Queens. He claimed that a tremendous flow of Syrian refugees has been entering the country. The total between 2012 and 2015 was around 2,000, barely a trickle. He claimed that we have no idea who those refugees are. They undergo up to 2 years of careful vetting before being admitted. Trump lies when speaking in generalities. He claimed that President Obama has damaged our security by restraining our intelligence gathering and failing to support law enforcement. Obama actually expanded domestic intelligence operations and only dialed them back because of bipartisan pressure following the Edward Snowden revelations. Trump lies by sweeping calumny. For some reason, the Muslim community does not report people like this, he said of Mateen. But according to law enforcement officials, including FBI Director James Comey, numerous potential plots have been foiled precisely because concerned Muslims reported seeing signs of self-radicalization. Trump lies by smarmy insinuation. We are led by a man that either is not tough, not smart, or he's got something else in mind, he said of Obama. There's something going on. It's inconceivable. There is something going on. He also said of Obama, he doesn't get it, or he gets it better than anybody understands. It's one or the other, and either one is unacceptable. You read that right. The presumptive Republican nominee implies that the President of the United States is somehow disloyal. There is no other way to read, he gets it better than anybody understands. Trump claims that Hillary Clinton, the all-but-certain Democratic nominee, wants to take away Americans' guns and then admit the very people who want to slaughter us. Clinton has made clear that she doesn't want to take anyone's guns away, nor does she want to eliminate the Second Amendment, as Trump also claims. And the idea that Clinton actually wants to admit would-be slaughterers is grotesque. I write not to defend Obama and Clinton, who can speak for themselves and have done so. My aim is to defend the truth. Political discourse can be civil or rowdy, gracious or mean, but to have any meaning, it has to be grounded in fact. Trump presents a novel challenge for both the media and the voting public. There is no playbook for evaluating a candidate who so constantly says things that are objectively not true. All of the above examples come from just 5 days' worth of Trump's lies, from Sunday to Thursday of last week. By the time you read this, surely there will have been more. How are we in the media supposed to cover such a man? The traditional approach, which seeks fairness through non-judgmental balance, seems inadequate. It does not seem fair to write, "Trump claimed the sky is maroon, while Clinton claimed it is blue," without noting that the sky is, in fact, blue. It does not seem fair to even present this as a question worthy of debate, as if honest people could disagree. One assertion is objectively false and one objectively true. It goes against all journalistic instinct to write in a news story, as the Washington Post did last week, that Trump's national security address was a speech laden with falsehoods and exaggeration. But I don't think we're doing our job if we simply report assertions of fact without evaluating whether they are factual. Trump's lies also present a challenge for voters. The normal assumption is that politicians will bend the truth to fit their ideology, not that they will invent fake truth out of whole cloth. Trump is not just an unorthodox candidate, he is an inveterate liar, maybe pathological, maybe purposeful. He doesn't distort facts, he makes them up. Trump has a right to his anger, his xenophobia, and his bigotry. He also has a right to lie. But we all have a duty to call him on it. And we'll take a short break now and return with the second half hour of the Decatur Herald and Review. Please stay tuned.